And joining us on the phone now from Duluth is Mark Wick, who is a scuba diver on Lake Superior and has taken a big interest in the steamship America that plied the waters along the coasts of the North Shore and Bayfield Peninsula about 100 years ago. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
All right, how are you tonight?
I'm real good.
Good, thanks. And maybe we just want to start up by just letting people know, because some people might not even know about the America, but I know it did stop into Grand Marais here on its way up and down the North Shore, but maybe you can kind of give us an overview of what the America did along the shore.
Sure. The American is what was called a collection steamer. It was about 182 or 183 feet long, and it went up and down the North Shore three times a week up to Port Arthur, over to Grand Marais, and then back to Duluth. And it brought up supplies to all the little settlers and fishing villages along the shore, and then it picked up fish that they had caught.
So it was kind of like the only way to transport yourself if you wanted to go up the North Shore. This pretty much, was that the only boat running along at that time?
No, there were other boats that were running. A lot of the older ones were wooden, and they would only last about 30 years before they started to leak, and they had started to have major problems with them. They were all steamboats at the time, and America was one of the earlier steel-hulled boats. And and it ran the shore from 1902 until 1928 when it hit a rock at Isle Royale and sank.
All right, and before we get into actually the sinking of it, because that's become quite a popular diving site up at Isle Royale, you have a connection to one of the mates on the boat, is that correct?
Yes. As I was growing up, my father and my uncle used to talk about my grandpa's cousin, John Wick, and that he was the first mate on the boat the night that it sank. He had just signed on. It was his first trip up the shore. He had been sailing on the Great Lakes since 1920 or 1921 on another ship, and he had just switched over to sail on the America.
Wow, and so is the time it crashed, so that was his maiden voyage for him on the boat, is that what you said?
That was his maiden voyage on the boat, and normally Isle Royale the America would go to Isle Royale during the day because it's quite, there's lots of reefs and shallow water here and there out there. And they were more comfortable navigating during the day. But on this particular trip, they had a couple of people who were really, really anxious to get out to the island. So instead of going up to Port Arthur, they went right straight across from Grand Marais over to Isle Royale, and they were there about 3 or 4 in the morning.
Wow. And so what have you learned about that fateful evening? That was in June, correct, of 28?
Yes, it was. They left Duluth on June 6th. I believe they got up to Grand Marais about maybe 10:30 at night, and then they left and headed across Isle Royale. And they dropped off some people at Washington Island at the Singer Resort. George Barnum was one of those people. And then one of the Sievertsons was on the boat, too. There weren't that many passengers because it was early in the season. After leaving Washington Island, they went down all the way to the end of Washington Harbor to the Washington Club, dropped some people off there, and then the captain went to bed. And as they were steaming out to go out of the North Gap and make the turn to go over to Port Arthur, they hit the bottom and tore a small hole in the bottom of the boat.
Now, was that an odd time for the captain to actually take a nap when you're navigating through such treacherous waters there on Isle Royale?
Well, it seems a little odd, especially since the first mate, it was his first trip up there, my third cousin, John. One would think that the wheelsman's name was Fred Nelson, that he would have been, real familiar because he had been on the boat, I think, for about 6 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But, at 3 or 4 in the morning when it's dark, lots of things can happen that you don't anticipate.
Right. So, So when they left and they went aground, then what happened after actually they tore a hole in the boat itself?
Well, they realized that the pumps weren't going to be able to keep up with the rising water, and of course the captain and quite a few of the people on the boat woke up when they struck, because it kind of shook the boat, and They started sounding the boat's steam whistle to let everybody know that there was an emergency and to get out of their cabins and things like that. And the captain realized that the water was rising fast enough in the engine room where it was going to put out the fires for the boilers, and that they would quickly lose steam, and then they wouldn't have any power. So he told the wheelsmen to put it up on the beach, and they did that right in the near the North Gap in the harbor there. But where they happened to hit shore, it was quite a steep incline. So the bow was on shore, or was aground, and the stern was over 90 feet of water.
So the back of the boat sank down quite a ways.
Right. So when it started to settle, it didn't. The boat wasn't well supported, and the bow is now only like 2 feet under the water, but the stern is right down at 85 or 90 feet. Fortunately, everybody was able to get off the boat. There was enough time for everybody to get into lifeboats, and some of the other fishermen who lived in Washington Harbor heard the boat's whistle, and they came across in their boats and rescued the people.
So everybody did live on the boat. No one perished on it.
Yeah, there was about 25 crew members and about 10 or 11 passengers at that point. They dropped off like 3 or 4 earlier in the evening. And everybody got off safely with the exception of one dog that was tied to the rudder post near the back of the boat. And the boat was starting to go down, and the captain wouldn't let the owners go back and get it because he was afraid that they might have to, you know, might sink with the boat.
Right. That's sad that only the dog didn't make it.
But. Yep.
So we're talking with Mark Wick, who's a scuba diver on Lake Superior and knows lots about the SS America ship that plied the waters of the North Shore here about 100 years ago. And so now that the boat's been there for quite a while, and it didn't take long before people started to scuba dive on it recreationally.
Yeah, well, the boat went down in 1928, and scuba diving, I believe, really only got popular probably in the 1950s, maybe the late 1950s, early 1960s. Earlier, there was some hard hat diving that went on, but I think the real interest in it started in like the 50s or 60s. And it's such a popular wreck because it's in a fairly protected area. You know, it's not right out in the open waters of Lake Superior. And then the bow is, like I said, only 2 or 3 feet under the water. You can see it from the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been a real accessible wreck and real interesting to divers.
And so how has it been? I hear lots of people talk about that, you know, shipwrecks in fresh water will be preserved quite a while. Is that true, or what is the condition of the America now?
Well, my dive partner has been diving on it since the 1970s. I've only been diving on that particular boat just recently, and he said it has started to deteriorate. There's some rust starting to show through the paint of the hull. He said mm-hmm. when he was first diving on it in the 1970s, the boat was still shiny black and really looked in very, very good shape. But it is starting to deteriorate now. Of course, it's been down there since 1928, so that's a lot of years.
Right, and is there somewhat of a group that's trying to take on the project to restore the boat underneath the water?
There is a group, the Great Lake Divers Association, or Shipwreck Preservation Society is what it is, the mm-hmm. Shipwreck Preservation Society, and they've undertaken to do a little bit of rebuilding of the superstructure on it. The hull is steel, but the superstructure is made of wood, and so the wood has started to deteriorate, and the ice has done some damage over the years, and, you know, it is near the North Gap, so there is some wave action there at times. So, the superstructure of the boat is taking a beating, and it's kind of just the iron decking and the iron hull down there now. There's the wooden sides have kind of collapsed. And are laying around the side of the boat.
Hmm. So how many people dive on that? I've heard of people like almost like 500 or 600 people a year dive on the boat. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right, yeah. I don't have the exact number. I imagine the Park Service has it because they keep track of, you have to sign in with them to be able to go out and dive on the boat. And then there's only certain times of the day that you can dive on it during the year when the ferries are coming out there because it's a popular attraction for the ferries, the Voyager 2 and the Sea Hunter, to stop and let people look over the side and see the boat, and they don't want any divers on it at that point. So
when it was your third cousin, first mate John Wick, who was on board the boat, and so that being his maiden voyage on that boat, what did he go on to after that?
Well, like I said, he'd sailed for about 7 or 8 years on a boat called the Jack, which hauled 350 tons of butter out of Duluth down to Bay City, Michigan.
Of butter?
Butter, 350 tons of butter every 8 days.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and then they would bring cars back up.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never heard of that one.
Yeah. Apparently it was refrigerated. It had some early refrigeration.
Hmm.
And it was part of three or four different boats called the Poker Fleet. That was the 10, the Jack, the Ace, and the Queen and the King.
Nice.
Yeah. And anyway, he signed on to the America, and after the boat sank, he went on another ship called the Charles S. Hebert, and he became the first mate of that ship, and he sailed on that for quite a number of years.
Hmm.
I think up until the early 1950s.
And did he spend his time on the North Shore, and then after that when he retired, or?
Well, you know, yeah, he stayed in Duluth, and he and his wife would winter in Florida. He was a member of the Vessel Masters Association here in Duluth. I have a picture of him with all the different ship captains and first mates. And he died in early 1952. I was born in late 1951, and he died about 5 weeks later, so I never got to know him.
Hmm.
But we took care of his widow, Anna Wick, for many, many years until she passed away in around 1980. And they never had any children, so we were her only family here in the United States.
Hmm. Well, that's a pretty interesting story. And so, but also coming up next weekend, it is the 25th annual Galesville November that's going to be held down on Canal Park in Duluth on both Friday and Saturday. And you're going to be giving a talk about this very thing at that event, are you not?
Yes, I am. I moved my mother into an assisted living situation here a little over a year ago, and when we were when we were packing up some of her things, I found a box of photographs and documents labeled John and Anna Wick, and in there was John Wick's passport from when he came from Norway in 1920, and some other interesting artifacts. And I just decided, you know, when you read the story about the steamer America sinking at Isle Royale, you always read that John Wick was the first mate, but nobody really knows very much about John Wick. So I put together a slideshow that the history of the boat, and then a little bit of my family history and who John Wick was and what other ships he went on to sail on, as well as some history of the North Shore ports and the Port of Duluth.
Well, that's great. And do you know, what is your speaking time at that? I have it that you're listed on there, but it doesn't give us the actual time you're going to be talking.
You know, and I was just looking at that today. I was looking at the poster, and I was thinking, it doesn't say on the poster the schedule. I'll have to go back in and look and find out exactly what time. I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't.
We were counting on you, Mark.
Yeah.
But if nothing else, they can go to the website there, the LSMMA and the Lake Superior Marine Museum Association's website, and it's all listed on there. And
Through giving this presentation to a couple of different groups, I've had people come up to me and say, you know, I have some information on some of the boats that used to be on the North Shore, and people have given me some interesting photographs. I met a woman in Duluth whose cousin and grandmother were on the boat the night that it sank. She has some original photographs that she gave me that I include in my presentation. She's a very nice woman, and she's written some historical fiction about the America. And so she and I talk fairly regularly.
Well, that sounds very great. Well, we definitely want to thank you for joining us here tonight on the Roadhouse, and let people know that you are going to be down at the Gales in November. That's next Friday and Saturday, November 2nd and 3rd, down in Canal Park in Duluth. Thank you for coming on the show here and telling us all about John Wick, because I have read in several different publications that you're right. It is the first mate is John Wick, and no one would know anything about that name. So that was great to have this little connection to someone in Duluth.
Yeah, Yeah, and I've always had an interest in boats, and just finding his passport and some of the other... I have his sextant, his brass sextant that he had when he... I suppose he had to have one to become the mate of the boats, and I think he was an ocean-going sailor before he came into the Great Lakes, so that's a beautiful instrument, too.
That's pretty... And I think you had his... was that his original ticket you had from him coming from...
Yeah, it was the that was another interesting thing. In this box of memorabilia, I guess you'd call it, was the ticket that he and his wife paid for to come over from Norway in 1921.
Wow.
John is listed on his passport as coming over in 1920, and then he apparently went back for his wife Anna, and they sailed over together in 1921, and they saved the original ticket. It has their ages. He was 31 and she was 29. And they paid 1,400 kroner for the trip.
Huh. I don't know if that's cheap or not, but that sounds pretty cool. That's some great pieces of history you got there.
Yeah, and there's some pictures of them on different ships. And, you know, one of the things that we didn't mention is the Charles S. Hebert that he sailed on after the America sank. The propeller for the Charles S. Hebert is in Canal Park in Duluth, right down there by the Marine Museum.
Right, that's a great scene. I've seen that before. That's it. There's another little tie-in. Next time I walk by that, I'll know exactly where that thing came from.
Yeah, and the pilot house is over next to the Bridgeview Motel as you go over the Blatnik Bridge towards Superior. When you get over there, the pilot house is right next to the motel at the base of the bridge. It says Charles S. Hebert on it.
That's great. I want to thank you for joining us here tonight, and hope your talks go well next week at the Gales of November. And, yeah, I just want to thank you for being on the air.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for interviewing me, and I hope to see some of your listeners over at the Gales of November program.
All right. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you, Matt.
Bye-bye.
Bye.